Hello, Professor Richard Schwartz.
Mark, good to see you.
It is good to be here with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been talking for a while about internal family systems, which is your gorgeous teaching and theory and unique
self.
Thank you. And so now we're finally getting together in a dialogue in this series, Answering the Call, to really share with people, first, what is internal family systems, question one. Two is, how does it relate to unique self? And before you start, I want to just give people a little bit of a meta overview and say a couple of nice things about you that you're not going to say.
Okay.
And then get started.
Okay.
So basically, you know, in the unique self world, we talk about non-linear stages of unfolding. So you begin with a pre-personal self, you emerge to the personal, which is your separate self personality. The words we use for it are separate self, personality, ego. And then from there, you've got to deal with your false self. Right, you know, at that same level, you're observing you, ego comes online, and you realize, well, actually, I might have a false self here. There might be something not healthy on my egoic level. At some point, classical enlightenment teaching talks about transcending the ego, but transcending and including, and getting to this place which classical enlightenment might call true self, which might well be the self in internal family systems. And then we talk about what emerges from true self as unique self. So in this arc of development, where you've spent really kind of, must be more than 30 years, doing some of the most pioneering, brilliant, leading edge work in the country, right, is how do you actually do the work at the level of separate self, ego, false self, to create a healthy integration without which nothing can even begin? Because if you bypass that stage, you know, everything ultimately falls apart because you're building on quicksand. So, you know, in that, let's really focus on that level of development. How does one, is kind of confused and has all these voices, how do you actually create integration using internal family systems, which is your gorgeous model in teaching?
Thank you. And my interest comes from seeing the similarity in your writing to my thinking. I think I took this idea of what you call
unique self,
as far as I could take it within the personality, but know that it goes other places, and you've taken it into the spiritual and back. And it's a very similar kind of evolution that I had envisioned, only I love the way you articulate it.
So that's wonderful, and I look forward to writing a piece together.
Yeah, it's a very nice fit that way.
It's wonderful.
So in terms of this personality world, about 30 years ago, actually, this year, I stumbled into working with clients, finding they had what I call now parts.
Parts.
Which would be known more as subpersonalities or ego states, things like that, which isn't a novel discovery. I mean, most schools of psychotherapy have some form of concept like that. But my advantage over a lot of the theorists that made those other discoveries was I knew nothing about what I was getting into, because I was trained as a family therapist, and as such was trained to not think about this at all. It's in fact, stay away from it.
So you thought in terms of the system?
I got into family therapy because that's where systems thinking had made a home.
Had really made a home, right.
And I was drawn to systems thinking, Gregory Bateson and all that stuff.
Right, Gregory Bateson and the whole gang.
Yeah, so I really immersed myself in that and bought into the idea you can change everything in a person without having to touch any of this.
Right.
By just working the external relationships.
Right.
Until I did an outcome study 30 years ago where I found that wasn't the case. That the bulimic kids that I was working with, we could reorganize the families and nothing would really change in terms of their symptoms. So I began asking about what was happening, and they described these different parts, and they would talk about them as if they had a lot of autonomy, as if they could take over and make them do things they didn't want to do, and that they fought with them all the time.
Give me an example of parts, what you mean when you talk about parts.
Yeah, so a client might say when something bad happens in their life, it triggers this critic who starts to call them names, which most people are familiar with.
Right.
And the names come and bring up another part that makes them feel totally worthless and empty and young and bereft. And that's so disturbing to feel that then the binge part comes into the rescue and takes them out a away from that feeling so that they have some respite from it. But the act of the binge triggered the critic.
Right.
And to me, that sounded like a little system in there.
A little system within the individual.
Within the individual of interacting
right.
people, in a way,
right.
sub-personalities. So I began to think, maybe systems thinking could operate in here the way it operates out there.
Right.
Maybe some family therapy technique could actually help in this inner world.
Hmm.
So I began to experiment with my clients and invited them to go home and try this, try that. And,
mm-hmm.
and because at that time, I thought these parts were what the field said they were, which were internalized thoughts or voices
right.
of parents, or I would mainly try to get my client to fight the nasty ones or ignore those and try to bring closer the ones that seemed helpful. And despite the fact that that was just making things worse, because the nasty ones would get more nasty, I didn't know what else to do. So I kept doing that until I had one client who turned it all around for me. It was a cut herself on her wrist.
Uh-huh.
And I was determined to keep that part from doing that in this kind of macho mindset I had at the time. We're
right.
going to get these parts. And so one session, I was having her have dialogue with it, and I would have dialogue with it in a, it's called a Gestalt open chair way.
Right, right.
And, it, you know, it was pretty intransigent, but through the course of about 2.5 hours of us just browbeating apart, it finally agreed not to cut her that week.
Wow.
And then I opened the door the next session the next week, and now she's got a big gash down the side of her face. And I kind of collapsed and got out of that power place and shifted into just being kind of, I give up, you know, sort of surrendering. I can't meet you with this. You're
autonomous in your field.
Exactly. And the part shifted. It said it didn't want to beat me.
Huh.
So I shifted again. Now I'm just curious. So why do you do this to her then?
Right. Let's have a conversation.
Yeah. And the part proceeded to tell me the story of how when she was being abused, child, how important it was to get her out of her body and to, and she already knew about the abuse, but I didn't make the connection.
Right.
Get her out of her body and to contain the rage would get her more abuse. She let the rage come out. And I shifted once again from now, not just being curious, but feeling appreciation for the heroic role it had played in her life.
Wow.
And could extend that appreciation to the part, and the part proceeded to tell me about why it still needed to do this. Because there were still reasons to get her out of her body, there was still
right.
rage. And I, again, I, but it also sounded like this part was stuck in the scene. It was still living as if the past was as dangerous as the present.
Right.
So, with all of that, I totally shifted my understanding of and ways of relating to these parts. And find now, 30 years later, and thousands of clients later, that it's true that none of these parts are what they seem. They're all valuable inner resources and qualities that get distorted out of their naturally valuable states into
mm-hmm.
roles that are often, they don't like themselves. And,
mm.
and then we go about misjudging them and fighting them or labeling them.
Right.
with the ego or something negative,
right.
pejorative, and that just, again, makes them stronger.
Makes them stronger.
So,
wow.
there's a, part of what I like about what you write is it turns out, and this took me years to learn, that love really is the answer. If you come to
right.
a suffering, but very extreme and hurt, even an inner enemy, with that kind of openness and compassion
right.
curiosity. They'll tell their secret histories, and the secret history, as Longfellow once said, will dissolve the hostility you have and open your heart to it.
Mm.
And that will also allow it to begin to shift.
Beautiful.
Out of its, so it's all parallel, is the point.
Mm. Yeah, no, well, I want to pick up here on two things you said, and what I want to do at this part of the dialogue is I want to adopt the role of the naive student.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get to unique self and just kind of try and restate some of the things you said in terms that helpful. I'll just kind of clarify them for myself as a naive student, and you'll, as we do in, you know, in Marin, we always reflect things to each other. I live in Marin County.
Yeah.
You can't, if you don't, have a men's group or reflect things to other people, you can't live in Marin.
Can't live in Marin.
So I can do this. Okay, then you get to adjust my reflection.
All right.
I have to see if it's good. Okay. So the word parts seems really important here. And in a sentence you used, you talked about the relationship between the part and the whole. And when I think about extremism, you know, just extremism as a phenomenon, extremism would seem to be the belief in a partial value.
Mm-hmm.
Extremists always believe in good values,
mm-hmm.
right? We're about the separation of church and state. That's a good value.
Right.
Right? We might make it really extreme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in terms of the abortion issue, I'm pro-life. Who's against life?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pro-choice. Who's against choice?
Right.
So they take a part and make it into a whole.
Yeah.
And they say, and the part begins to operate independently of the whole and masquerades as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're really saying is that you come from family systems, and family system is basically looking at the individual as this kind of whole.
Mm-hmm.
And you're realizing, no, actually, there's a system happening here,
mm-hmm.
and that system's made up of many parts, and where the system pathologizes is A, you don't recognize that there are parts, but B, the parts, right, are treated as demons, they're demonized, and the parts themselves, in response to that demonization, kind of bloat up and become holes and try and operate independently of the larger system,
mm-hmm.
without being in play with the larger system.
Mm-hmm.
So really what it turns out is that family systems brought you to internal family systems,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of the basic monadic principle or the basic systemic principle of the universe, or let me say it even better, right? If I would ask, what's the basic structure of the universe,
mm-hmm.
right? Is it quarks? You know, is it, you know, spirit molecules? I'd say the basic structure of the universe is part holes.
Mm-hmm.
Part holes all the way up, part holes all the way down.
Yeah, I love Arthur Kessler's.
I mean, Kessler's holon.
Holon, yeah.
Kessler's holon is a whole part.
Right.
You know, so Kessler really kind of brought this into... So basically what you're saying to us actually is that we were missing in therapeutic work this real right relationship between whole and part.
Mm-hmm.
And by setting that right, you kind of change the entire system. That's kind of seems to be this first huge insight, which kind of fits in, meaning it really supports and nourishes what we're trying to say in the world spirituality world, which is the relationship between whole and parts is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in right relationship between whole and parts in a given field is where balance and equilibrium comes from, whether it's between different systems of thought, whether it's between different people, whether it's between different disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually, in some sense, the great champion of right relationship between wholes and parts within a human being.
I think that's right. And that
do I get an A? I just want to do a B,
yeah.
A minus?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, pretty...
pretty good.
Pretty much in the A minus category.
A minus, okay.
Yeah.
So get me to an A.
Okay.
Okay, get me to an A.
I think it's true, and I liked what you wrote about how the mistake many parts make is thinking they're the whole or
right.
trying to be the whole.
Right.
So I think that's true. What I also found, which is related to your unique self-concept, is that in addition to these parts, there is what I call the self.
Let's go.
You know, I think it is the same as what you're talking about, unique self. I'll tell you a little bit of the story of something that, but in terms of the A minus, it isn't right relationship necessarily between, well, it is in a way, between the part and the whole, as it is between the part and this thing I call self. Then that creates the right relationship between the part and the whole system.
Right. Well, the whole, in some sense, is self.
You know what? Well, yes and no. I mean, for me...
Take it away.
Like, some theorists, like Jung, use the word self in a variety of different ways, one of which was the whole person.
Right.
I don't, that for me is the person or the personality.
Mm.
So a person or a personality has parts and also has a self. And the self, and if you really want to get to the beauty of this, sort of.
Let's go.
The fractal nature of all this.
Yeah, completely. It's by the fractal is the core
for me
structure,
also.
Absolutely.
So
unique self-thinking.
Which I have done. If you worked with one part,
right,
like with someone who has qualified as DID,
right, DID.
So,
tell us what that means.
That'd be like the old multiple personality diagnosis.
Got you. Dissociative identity disorder.
Right. So you're working with with one of these alters
right.
for an extended number of sessions.
Right.
And if you were to ask it about its parts, it could tell you about its parts.
Right.
And it has self also.
Right.
And it turns out, as you get to know it system, it's fairly parallel to the system in which it's embedded. Its parts are very similar to the
right.
parts in the outside system. And you can even go, so it's fractals all the way down.
Right. Fractal meaning, for those people listening, that any part contains the whole.
Yes, and that there are
these
isomorphic systems.
That's right.
That are
embedded in each other.
Embedded in each other, exactly. So that was kind of mind-boggling and
yeah.
beautiful. And that's been a big theme of mine, although I haven't written that much about it, as the parallel universes, internal, external,
yeah.
which I'd love to talk more about
yeah.
now, today. But anyway, getting back to the story of stumbling into this self thing.
Right.
So I'm doing the dialogues with these parts, with clients,
right.
and I'm finding that being a relationship person, I'm trying to improve the relationship between, say, the critic and a
right.
you know, bulimic kid.
They should go have a drink together.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm finding that the kid is getting angry at the critic.
Right.
Things are breaking down. And it reminded me of family sessions when I've been working with a teenage kid and her parent
mm-hmm.
who's critical. And then she gets angry at the parent. You notice the other parent is cueing her. He disagrees too. And we learned as family therapists to get him to step back in the room so she can't see him, the girl. And then things go better between the mother. And maybe the same thing's happening with this inner system. Maybe as I'm trying to have a dialogue between my client and this critic, some heart is influencing her to hate the critic.
Right.
So I begin asking clients, could you get that one to just step back? The same basic thing I did in families.
Right.
And clients said, to my utter amazement, okay, it did. And now how do you feel toward it? And if I did that with a couple, three parts, at some point, spontaneously and suddenly, clients would shift out of all the fear or the hatred toward the part, and their hearts would open, and they'd say, I feel sorry for it.
So give us, just for our listeners, I'm completely with you, but give us just one example of, name the parts and just
yeah,
play it
so,
out for us.
So how, like I'd say, okay, she's talking, she's internally, it's a kind of inner dialogue, talking to this critic. I might say, okay, well, things aren't going well. How do you feel toward this critic? I hate it. It calls me names all day. Okay, I can understand why you would hate that.
So you're talking to Emily, and Emily hates her critic.
Emily hates her critic.
Right.
So Emily, I really get why you would hate it. You know, it makes sense that nobody likes to be called names all day. But just for the purposes of getting to know it and maybe helping it not have to do that, would the one who hates it be willing to separate a little bit?
Mm.
And most clients will say, okay, it did. And if they won't, then I'll say, oh, let's work with the one who won't separate.
So what's happening is you're saying to Emily, it's not all of Emily that hates the critic.
Right.
There's actually a part in you that hates the critic.
Exactly.
And you, Emily, can actually ask that part to step back, just like you'd ask the father to have the aunt step back.
Now you get an A.
Good.
So
now you're getting more perceptive.
Exactly. So
we have to have a little ego dance to make sure the separate self is still here.
Right.
Otherwise we'll just merge into bliss love.
Can't do that. So finding that when parts separate,
right.
in the moment, immediately, there'd be a shift in
wow.
the client. And they might shift into some other extreme state, but
right.
if I could get also that to step back, at some point, suddenly, spontaneously, universally, they would shift into a state
mm.
that has all those qualities that you've been writing about, that I've been writing about.
Right.
And they might suddenly say, I'm just curious about why it calls me names.
Right, that's great.
So no longer angry at it, no longer afraid of it, now calm relative to it,
right.
confident, and curious. So three of the,
fantastic.
What I call the C-word qualities that that come forward.
Calm, confident, and curious.
Yeah, three of the eight what we call C-word qualities
mm-hmm.
of self-leadership. So in that state, then the critic also would relax.
Right.
So
they
didn't feel attacked or judged. And they could have a good dialogue.
Fantastic.
And then the dialogue would be about what the critic was afraid would happen, and it didn't call her names. At that point, it would reveal what it protects inside of her, which is usually something very vulnerable. And then we would negotiate going to the vulnerable one so we could heal it, which would then free up the critic to not have to be nasty.
I mean, it's in some sense, Dick, and I don't want to in any way isolate that. Really the luminosity of your contribution to a particular, I don't want to reduce it, so I don't want to do that, but I want to just try and focus on it for a second, because we've known for a long time about subpersonalities and ego states.
Yes.
But what happened is, in walks unique self, if I can coin a term again,
yes,
Dick Schwartz, who is deeply attuned with family systems,
yes,
and then he realizes that these ego states and subpersonalities actually are much more energetically powerful and autonomous and can be worked with,
mm-hmm,
right? And I'm kind of feeling that the kind of eureka moment, mm-hmm, you know, when you say to Emily, could you tell that part to step back? And she does, and you say, wow.
That was amazing. I said, if I could do this with lots of people, this would be amazing.
I mean, I can literally feel the eureka moment. They're like, really? Did that just, right?
Exactly.
Like, right? And that's what we didn't know in terms of subpersonalities and ego states, that actually you could work with them in that way, the way you work with the family system, and that took your, if you will, unique perspective,
right,
which brought everything together to bring forth this unique piece of knowing.
Thank you.
Of creativity, and that's really exciting.
The other eureka moment was when they did step back,
right,
finding this emergent
state
that people would get into, in addition to those C-word qualities,
right,
clients would begin to have these dialogues where they would know exactly what to say, where,
right,
they had a kind of intuitive wisdom about how to heal. They would know just the right words to say to a critic. When we got to the part of protected, which is often a lot younger,
right,
would know exactly how to go and be loving to that part.
Beautiful.
So it would feel held and
right.
So
this is the second eureka moment, where what emerges out of this conversation and this kind of very skillfully catalyzed stepping back is this emergence, an emergent quality, right, which hadn't been visible, right, of what you've been calling a self, which actually had more wisdom and more knowing than the classical separate self personality could have ever shown, not in that deeper emergent state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was shocking to me because I, like most of us, have been trained that for people to have that kind of ego strength,
right,
they had to have had a some kind of parenting.
Right.
You know, at a certain critical period in their life.
And without that, they just couldn't
without
have
that, they wouldn't be there.
And what you discover that actually that it, when actually things settle down, it's native.
It's native. We're born
and begins
with
to
it.
Emerge.
I read in your book.
Right.
It's your birthright.
It's your birthright.
I've been saying
good
that
book
a long time. It's a great book.
So let me. I mean, this is just, it's such a delightful dialogue, and it's so exciting to be resonant in this way. And if I can, just for a few minutes, just to pick up where unique self comes into the conversation now. So this state of this emergent state of what in our language we would call true self,
mm-hmm,
or you're calling self, which is the kind of native, awake,
just
alive.
Just as a pause,
please.
I'm not wild about the juxtaposition or the dichotomizing between true self and false self.
Right, right.
So that's why I don't go with true self.
No, I got you. So the way I'm using it, and that's fair, and maybe we'll find a common nomenclature. The way I'm using false self, so maybe I'll start there. False self would mean something like, I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, false self would mean, you know, I'm too much,
mm-hmm,
right, which is usually mine. It's really, world can't handle it, like go back in a box, right? Right, but that's some false self state where you have a kind of limiting belief, which is, you know, from the Oscar Achazo kind of early work, you know, where you kind of viewed your fixation or your Enneagram type, not as who you were,
right,
but as the way the ego, right, created its attention fixation to navigate what Gurdjieff called the shock of separation.
Right.
So I'm using false self in that Gurdjieffian, Ouspensky kind of sense.
And all that is true of parts, or the ego, or the false self. And the mistake that so many spiritual traditions and
yeah,
so
we've
many
talked about
therapies
this. Yeah.
have made is to assume that's basically what they are. So I think one of the contributions I'm bringing, I haven't mentioned yet,
please,
which is the distinction between a part and the burden the part carries that drives its extremes. So that what I found over these experiments was we would get to a part and it would say things like, you're too much, or you're not
right
enough, or you're bad, or something. And I would make that mistake. I would assume it was that.
Right.
But as I got to know it, it could convey that that was something that it carried in its body or on it that wasn't who it was, but was what I call a burden that drove it like a virus.
And that, so what would you call it? Let's see if we can, let's, before I get to unique self, I'm you know, beyond the particular, you know, kind of lower right structure, as we would say in integral terms, of this exciting dialogue we're doing that's being filmed. Let me bracket that for a second spontaneously on stage, if you will, and let's see if we can together, you know, what term would we come up with? Because I understand the problem with the term false self. Our colleague, Suzanne Cook-Reuter, who's a very good developmental psychologist, you know, Suzanne and I have had this conversation, and we all agree that actually false doesn't quite get it, because we don't want to make the mistake of spiritual traditions of delegitimizing the ego or its parts, but it's false in the sense that it claims to be the whole truth.
But what I, yeah,
so what would you call
true.
It?
I mean,
what would you call it? Give it a name. A partial self? What would we call it to capture that sense of?
I just call it a part that carries a burden, and that, for me that's simple enough.
It's not good branding, Dick. A part that carries a burden. I mean, give me a break.
A part that carries a false belief.
Right.
Carries a false emotion. Part that,
right. So we have to, we'll look for it. I'm completely. We agree on the content.
Okay.
I, you know, the false self term is helpful in that it's false because it claims to be a whole.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll have to work on that terminology because. But yeah, I'm with you on that.
And the point of it is that just like when a person has an aha moment and they realize that
right.
something they believed all their lives wasn't true.
Right.
They can transform and become a totally different person.
Right.
The same is true with these parts. When they're willing to give up these burdens, give up the beliefs and the emotions that they got from negative experiences, often when they were very young, the part itself will immediately transform into its naturally valuable state. So the crusade I'm on is to help people realize that what they've been denigrating as the false self or the ego or it's really the same, and in your book also you write that's true.
Yeah, no, we, that's a major place of our meeting.
But then you also get into the bashing of it, from my point of view.
Right, and I'm holding both. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Your reading is very close here. I'm an A minus, right? But it's a total A plus. I mean, in other words, I'm holding a kind of dialectical tension in that issue. And the way I would say it is, and let me just bring our listeners into our conversation for a second, because about 3 minutes ago we started shorthanding in our deeper conversation. So basically, the question we're talking about is, and let's use separate self and false self as a, you know, linked term. What's our relationship to the personality, ego, separate self, false self, all different terms for the same complex? So where you and I agree completely, and the way I would say it in my terms is that teachers who talk about evolution beyond ego are actually doing their students a great disservice, because you actually never evolve beyond ego, nor should you. You'd be pathological if you did.
Right.
You want to actually evolve beyond exclusive identification with ego.
With ego the way it is, the burdened ego.
With the burdened ego.
Because of the point I'm trying to make.
Oh, even with the healthy ego. And you want to evolve beyond exclusive.
This is where we might have a difference.
So let me frame it and give it to you. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
So in other words, you'd want to evolve beyond exclusive identification with ego, healthy or false, simply because you're not merely a skin encapsulated ego, even if it's a healthy ego. You're actually part of the seamless code of the universe, right? Which is what I'm calling, using the classical nomenclature, true self. And the total number of true selves in the world is one.
Yeah.
Like that.
I get all that. And
please.
Here's potentially a difference.
Go, no, it's exciting.
I think when I explain it, you might think of not as a difference.
Please.
If you take what I said at first seriously, which is it's fractals, they're all the same. These are personalities that have parts and self. And self.
Mm-hmm.
Each part has self.
Right.
Then, as they transform and heal, there is this connection to myself that wasn't there before. They kind of get that they're not just isolated little individuals, but that they're part of something larger, which is my personality. And they have a kind of enlightenment about that and how they are all part of one system, one inner ecology, and they feel a lot more for each other and for the larger system.